Much of the charm from some of our downtown areas comes from quaint older buildings. The architectural styles survived for more than a century, but the building techniques used to create those styles are way out of date. Simply put, a lot of charming older buildings would not survive the kinds of earthquakes that our region is prone to. The city of Ashland is in the early stages of an effort to protect older buildings from seismic activity. Michael Grubbs is the Ashland building official and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange today. Michael, thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
So tell us about the basic issue here. I mean, we just sort of outlined the premise here, but I mean, is there a pretty good stock of older buildings in that category in Ashland?
Yes, most of downtown is constructed of unreinforced masonry buildings. There are other concrete-type buildings and even wood structures. So these types of buildings and the construction methods, when those were built, there was no concern for earthquake. Oregon was thought to be safe. Recent research and geologic studies have determined quite the opposite, that there is a massive earthquake headed our way, and when... It's hard to say. It could be any time. It could be hundreds of years from now. But these buildings are susceptible to earthquake and failure, which equates to not only the loss of building, but possible loss of life.
When we talk about the Cascadia subduction zone, which is the region in which we live, then we're talking about an earthquake that could be up around 9, from what we understand from the seismologists and the geophysicists. And it has been 314 years since the last one, and it could be a 150 to 500 year cycle, we're told. So yeah, that explains the could be any time thing. We really don't know. Unreinforced masonry, when we use that term, what do we mean?
Brick and mortar, CMU, cement masonry units, stacked together, and the bonding strength of that construction type is the mortar and the brick itself, and it's held together by gravity, basically. And modern construction incorporates a lot of rebar, a lot of steel inside the concrete and masonry units to help hold it together and to resist lateral forces that would cause them to possibly fail or collapse.
So if the gravity gives out or something gives the wall a good shove, I mean, we're talking a really big shove, then parts of it just come off. There's nothing to attach it to keep it all together up and down.
Right, to hold it, to tie it together. So modern construction methods, they tie, if you have a multi-story building, tie floors to the walls. There's steel in the foundations. The foundations are larger and stronger, and it allows it to perform better in an earthquake or some kind of a seismic event.
When we say rebar, are we talking about just the reinforcing bars that tend to appear in concrete structures?
That's correct.
Got
yes.
It. Okay. So when we talk about the unreinforced masonry, then is there basically no rebar, no reinforcement in any building before a certain year?
Research has shown that prior to 1976, the building codes didn't have adequate provisions for seismic strengthening of structures. So these older buildings, it's hard to say what the construction techniques were at that time and what these buildings are truly made of. And, you know, maybe there are hidden pockets of steel in there that would allow them to perform better. A good example is the Jacksonville County Courthouse. An article in yesterday's paper talked about the city of Jacksonville moving into this 1883 structure, mm-hmm. and it's a red brick building, but it was built well. It's got 30-inch walls at the bottom, 18 inches at the top. The mortar has survived and was well installed, I guess. And the engineer has determined that seismic retrofit would be minimal for this structure, even though it is unreinforced. But minimal, I guess, is... It's still expensive. Yeah.
Well, okay. So that gets down to some of the issues about what sorts of things can be done then if you're facing a building. And I'm assuming that most of those old brick buildings on Ashland's downtown plaza are unreinforced masonry. Do we know though? I mean, I guess that's the first question: are we even sure what's in some of these?
We can take good educated guesses as to how these buildings are built by observation. FEMA's developed a program called the what's it called? FEMA 154 evaluation. It's a post-disaster or post-earthquake evaluation of a structure and how it will, a guess as to how it will perform in a seismic event. So an engineer or an educated architect or engineer can also determine, and it will take some research, opening some walls, popping some ceiling tiles, getting into attics, getting on roofs, getting under the building, to look, see what's present and what could be done. Some of the downtown buildings on the plaza are sitting on stone foundations, so we don't even have concrete with a strengthening rebar in them. They're stone foundations.
And is the stone foundation connected to anything underneath, do we know, or could it just be based on the creekside bank?
It's probably just sitting on bedrock that was hopefully excavated down to a solid point where they could just build the stone up. The Methodist Church at 175 North Main had a stone foundation, and about 8 years ago, they had the forethought and foresight to replace that foundation with an engineered concrete-type foundation to support the structure.
Which speaks to some different techniques here, then, because that's mostly a wooden building, isn't it?
That's correct.
So if you have a wooden building on a decent foundation, is it a bit safer than an unreinforced masonry building?
Well, no building is totally safe.
Safer, I guess.
Safer it would be a better term. Every building will receive some kind of damage, depending on the severity of the earthquake, but what we would like to see is we want that building to survive that seismic event so people can get out and so people can themselves survive. Wood structures typically perform better than masonry or concrete, but older wood structures would need some kind of reinforcing as well. The way the roof system's tied to the walls, brace panels in the corners, which would be sheets of plywood with strict nail patterns to help support those and hold those together for lateral shaking, not just gravity loads, but lateral side-to-side movement.
So the roof doesn't pop off and fall in or something?
Right. The roofs are heavy. So houses, wood structures are top-heavy. So if it starts to teeter, then the weight of the roof will just push the structure over. So
Michael Grubbs is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Ashland building official. We're talking about seismic retrofits for older buildings, primarily the unreinforced masonry kinds of building. You might have some questions or comments about this or have some examples from your own town. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. Our Rogue Valley local number is 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Michael, are there any requirements at this point for seismic retrofitting on certain levels of refurbishment or occupancy change or anything like that?
The structural code does have requirements for seismic retrofit when you do certain things to a remodel. Most remodels don't reach that threshold, though, so a lot of buildings get overlooked or will not receive that kind of structural enhancement that would be required. An example would be changing an occupancy from a B for business to an assembly to create a large meeting hall. Then we would require seismic retrofit.
And is that under statewide national codes or Ashland-specific codes?
It's just State of Oregon adopts the International Code Council's set of codes, and it's the International Building Code with Oregon Amendments. So it's a statewide set of codes that we use and enforce.
So how is a retrofit done? If, for example, you've got a building that's got the good brick walls and the big posts in the middle and all that sort of stuff, what are the steps you take to make it less likely to fall apart in an earthquake?
Well, the first thing I would do, or you would have to do, is enlist the help of an engineer to come and evaluate your structure, determine what level of resistance you want to provide. The code, you know, there are different levels you could seismically retrofit. After the engineer does an evaluation, the engineer will determine exactly what you should do to retrofit your building. And a lot of cases, it involves a lot of steel, a lot of concrete.
I have seen, I think the Jacksonville Inn is probably an example of this, because I remember seeing some, maybe not the Jacksonville, I'm thinking it's maybe someplace in Ashland, but, you know, big cross-braced steel members. It looks like there are I-beams set up in the place. Is that one of the things that can be done?
Yes. Let's see, Paddington Station, the owner there, I forgot her name, she voluntarily seismically upgraded her building, and that's, you know, that is a wonderful thing to just decide to do for the good of the building and for the good of her patrons and employees. Another building is Taroko's. It was seismically upgraded. Alan Sandler is that building owner. And then SOU just recently upgraded and seismically retrofitted their Churchill Hall, their business center. And that building is just laced with steel structure. It's a steel cage or steel beams and posts that are just tie the exterior walls, ceiling, and floors all together.
Do you get into some situations where you need to get a hold of historians and you know, people who know building history, things like that? Because some of these buildings, for example, can be in historic districts, as is the case with much of downtown Jacksonville, for example. Are there some limits there to what can be done and still give the building a historic character?
That's a topic we have yet to look into. I know there's historic significance to many buildings in Jacksonville and in Ashland, and how to seismically retrofit it and then yet maintain its charm and character is certainly a challenge, and most of the work would have to be concealed, I would guess. That's part of what we're looking into as well.
Let's take a call for Michael Grubbs, the Ashland building official, about seismic retrofits. Here's Frank in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. I noticed in the early 70s, when I was a student at SOC then, that the student union was pancakeable. Has that problem ever been solved or acknowledged?
You mean it was believed that it was not particularly up to snuff seismic?
Correct. It looks as if all the panels will drop straight down and pancake, they call it.
All right. Let's find out from Michael. Thanks for the call, Frank. Whoops, sorry.
I'm not sure that an evaluation has been done for that building, but that would be certainly a good first step. And I know SOU is conscious of the vulnerability of their buildings, and they certainly want them to survive. So I don't know if they have plans to evaluate that structure and what it would possibly need. But, yes, there are large glass panels, and the building code those are referred to as weak stories where posts hold up heavy floors. So, yes, could it collapse? I don't know. It would have to be evaluated, though.
Here's an email from Debbie in Talent. She says, I have a rental in Phoenix that is unreinforced concrete block. Are there any handyman-level retrofits that would increase its earthquake safety?
There are tools that homeowners can use to increase the earthquake safety of their homes. FEMA website has some direction for homeowners. The basics are, again, consult an engineer or have a professional contractor evaluate the structure and possibly offer some solutions. But the biggest one is bolting your house to the foundation so it doesn't walk off, reinforcing the front of your garage where you have a great big opening in a short wall with short sidewalls, so those corners need to be braced with plywood. And those are basic steps that you can do that aren't real expensive.
When you talk about bolting the house to the foundation, is it true that houses will sometimes otherwise be intact after an earthquake, but because they have slid off the foundation, they are in a world of hurt?
Yes, a lot of research. And you know, the building code learns by events, by disasters.
Trial and error,
and it adjusts. And so now the building code has noticed that in past earthquakes, perfectly well-built, good homes have walked off their foundations, so they've increased the tie-down strength requirements for houses to the foundation. So, yes, you can. Good homes can walk off the foundation, and when that happens, it renders it in uninhabitable. So,
and is there any way to get the house back up on the foundation? You're going to end up doing some damage to it to get it in that position, aren't you?
Yeah, it gets real expensive. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you can. There are ways to save homes depending on the degree of damage, yes.
Michael Grubb is the Ashland building official. We're talking about potential changes to city code to require seismic retrofits for buildings that are not particularly up to snuff seismically, which involves a lot of historic buildings. Join us on the exchange with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. Even if you retrofit a building, though, you're still going to get a situation where you're going to get some crumbling bricks, you're going to get some falling masonry, but the structure of the building will stay intact because you've essentially built a cage?
Right. Rather than complete building collapse, you will see some damage. Some brick and mortar will fall. And our intent is not to, well, I mean, I guess it's up to the owner of the building and what they want to put into it. But we just want buildings to stay standing so that people can get out. And then as to the level of the seismic retrofit, whether the building can be retrofitted or rebuilt afterwards. And also it would, there's a big concern for usability of getting people back into their buildings after the event. And if the damage is too great, of course, they'll be uninhabitable. So
this is sort of like the building equivalent of an airbag. I mean, you're not going to stop the car from getting crunched pretty badly, but you're at least hoping that the occupants will walk out okay.
That's a good analogy, yes.
All right, so what is the process then? I mean, how far have you gotten along so far, and are there other communities around to compare some notes with about what they've done?
Well, presently, we just presented the idea to City Council, and they've given us direction to move ahead with research, and they've asked a lot of questions. For example, insurance impacts. Have we done a building inventory for downtown? What buildings are most susceptible? Are there any kind of incentives that the city can offer to building owners, such as tax incentive or permit fee reductions? And so we're looking into all of those, and I have and I'm compiling a plan of attack. And other cities who have done this, City of Medford has their ordinance in place and has been for quite some time. City of Portland, City of Seattle, they've had their ordinance in place since the early 90s, and now they're about to embark on not only requiring a seismic upgrade when you remodel, but if you own an unreinforced masonry building, that they're going to just make it mandatory that building be seismically upgraded, and they'll give you a certain time frame. California's way ahead of the curve. The cities of Berkeley, even Eureka, has identified buildings that are vulnerable and have ordinances in place. And I said Berkeley, Los Angeles, most of the major cities down there have ordinances in place already.
Have you begun the inventory in Ashland?
No, I haven't. That's a daunting task. I'm not quite sure how to do it.
It sounds like you start with the areas where it's obvious, like on the plaza first.
Yeah, probably, yes. And I'm going to enlist the help of Chief Carnes, has done some research in that. And we've inventoried individual single-family homes, but we will, of course, want to inventory our commercial building stock as well.
John Carnes, the fire chief.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he's got some concerns in his own department about this whole situation.
Oh, yeah. He's very much in favor of this, and I have his support to move forward with this.
Were you the building official in Ashland in 1993? I'm just curious about whether there was a lot of examination of what happened in Klamath Falls with unreinforced masonry buildings. I was there the night of the earthquake and saw what happened to the – well, I got there after the shaking was done, but mm-hmm. But saw the results. You know, a lot of bricks on cars, things like that.
Right. A lot of parapet walls failed and in their downtown. The building official then was Michael Broomfield, and I was not, obviously. So I'm not quite sure if he looked into that, other than I do know that the building codes did adjust after that event, and Oregon's seismic rating increased in severity after that event.
It certainly made it clear, if it wasn't clear already, that there was some adjustment that needed to be made. So the council said go ahead and do research, inventory, all that sort of thing. Is there a date by which they expect to report back from you?
They haven't given me a date yet, no. But I would like to get something back to them within a few months anyway.
All right. So certainly by the fall, let's say.
Yes.
Is there a requirement that, I mean, I imagine that somewhere there have got to be blueprints on file of buildings once they're built. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but those probably wouldn't have been available for some of these really older buildings, though.
Yeah, the older buildings, no. We do keep on file copies of blueprints of new construction. We have an archive that dates back to the 60s, but not all buildings are there. And so there are some prints in our archives, and certainly the original plans for any building would be a great tool to determine your building's structural ability.
But the older the building, the lesser the chance, I'm sure.
Probably, yes.
And you mentioned that there was talking about some tax incentives or fees if this goes into effect in Ashland, if you do make some changes to code requiring seismic retrofits. Is there any talk of some sort of fund to help people out, some sort of access to loans? Is there some sort of FEMA thing that can be tapped into here? Do we know?
That is a very good question, and council did ask me that very same question, and I don't believe there's any funding available. We're looking into that. It would be some cities in California actually set up and provided no-interest loans for building owners for those who are financially unable to upgrade their buildings, and I don't know that Ashland is in that position, but that's also part of the research, is to look into what kind of possible funding we can help building owners with.
Is there some concern you could get some owners stuck between a rock and a hard place, in the sense that, well, they've got this cool-looking building, but it's too out of date seismically to do anything with, but it's historic and they can't tear it down?
Yeah, there's a lot of concern. I mean, I certainly have feelings and understand the costs involved in a seismic upgrade, and it will be difficult for some building owners, and we certainly want to take that into consideration when we write the ordinance, too.
All right. Is there a public hearing planned at some point in this process?
We will have one, and we'll certainly notify all the building owners, and it hasn't been determined yet, but we will have a public hearing, okay. I'm sure.
A few months' work ahead of you, no doubt.
Yes.
Michael Grubb is the Ashland building official. We're talking about potential changes to city code to handle seismic retrofits for historic buildings with unreinforced masonry. Thank you so much for joining us once again, Michael.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, that'll do it for this segment of the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take a short break and come back with Garrison Keillor.